Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket at will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Week two of the NFL football season kicking off tonight. An opportunity to get an up-close look at the number one overall pick in this past year's draft, Joe Burrow. Welcome into a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Love the fact that we have NFL football on Thursday. You'll be able to listen to tonight's game, Cincinnati at Cleveland, right here on KOAL. We'll get you out to Westwood One's coverage at 6 p.m. And I think we're going to focus really heavily on football today. We have one NBA basketball game coming up tonight, Game 2 of the Eastern Conference Finals between the Celtics and the Heat. But other than that, really, it's just baseball and then, of course, the Bengals and the Browns. And that's what's happening in the national sports front. Let's start by talking about the NFL. Some more bad news for the Los Angeles Chargers, and I swear this team cannot catch a break. First, it was Derwin James. Now, it's Mike Pouncey. Season-ending surgery, so the Chargers will be without their center. He's soon going to undergo hip surgery. It's going to keep him out for the remainder of the year. It's a tough blow for this team. Because one of the issues last year, we talked about the injuries to the defense, but one of the big issues last season, it was the health of the offensive line. And Pouncey, he spent time on the IR with a hip injury while he was with Miami in 2016. Started every game over the next 2 years, including his first season with the Chargers in 2018, but then missed the final 11 weeks last year after undergoing neck surgery. He started all 114 games that he has played in his career, but Tommy Telesco says today that surgery is going to take place before the end of the month. And so that pretty much means that he is done, which means fourth-year offensive lineman Dan Feeney will more than likely replace Pouncey as the starting center, with Forrest Lamp likely filling in for Feeney at left guard. One of the things that is just overlooked, I think, completely when you talk about the NFL, it's the patchwork that teams have to do up front when injuries start to occur. And if it's one injury, it's bad enough. But when you start seeing two, you're seeing second-unit guys pulled up, you're seeing first-unit guys moved around, and that's typically when offensive lines begin to struggle. Really, that's the only big national story coming out today. Day baseball, I mean, that's kind of dominated the realm. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that we are nearing that 10-game mark for a lot of teams. Remember, you only play 60 games, so a squad like the White Sox, they've played their 50th game today. The Braves, they've played 50 games. The Cubs, they've played 50 games. The Reds have played 51 games. So when you really start breaking it down and looking at it, we are into the home stretch, literally, of Major League Baseball. So let's take a look at the scores, because plenty of day games. And we have some action going on right now as the Angels lead the Diamondbacks 6-1. Not a game that necessarily has playoff implications, but there is a game in the sixth inning that does, and that's the Giants and the Mariners. The Giants trailing in this one 4-1 through everything. Dave Kapler has this Giant team at .500. They'll slip below that mark if they lose this game to the Mariners, but the Giants fighting for a playoff spot. Don't forget, it's been expanded to 8 teams. Right now we have the Rays on top of the Orioles 1-0. Baltimore now 5 under .500, but the Rays running away with the AL East at 31-18. Some finals from earlier today. The Red Sox get a win over the Marlins. A rare win for the Red Sox, and as of late, a rare loss for the Marlins, who are now 25-23 on the season. The White Sox, top team in the American League, they topped the Twins 4-3. In this game today, I saw one of the most bizarre things that I have seen in a regular baseball game. Josh Donaldson goes yard for the Twins, and at that time put the Twins up 3-2, excuse me. This was in the sixth inning. So 3-2, solo shot, Twins up. Josh Donaldson was upset over a strike that was called in that at-bat. So as he crosses home plate, he kicked dirt at the umpire, got tossed, made his way back over to home plate and covered the dirt with his cleats and then made his way to the exit. So Josh Donaldson's team loses 4-3. He gave him the lead momentarily and then was tossed after kicking dirt at the umpire as he crossed home plate. I've never seen that. I'm sure it's happened before, but I have never seen that. So a couple of finals from earlier today. Here's what we have coming up tonight. Blue Jays-Yankees. Big game for both teams. The Yankees have passed the Blue Jays for second place in the American League East. The Blue Jays right now, two wins back of the Yankees, one back in the loss column. Start time for this game is set for 5:05. Tanaka will be on the mound for the Yankees. He's 2-2 with a 3-1 ERA. While the Blue Jays will send out Julian Merriweather. He's 0-0. On the mound so far this year, but he's got a 3 ERA. 5:05 tonight, we get the Mets and the Phillies. Big game for Philadelphia at 24-24. They'll send Aaron Nola out on the mound. 5:05 tonight, Cardinals-Pirates. Another big game for the St. Louis Cardinals. One game under 500 at the moment. Dakota Hudson will till the rubber tonight for St. Louis. 5:10, Indians-Tigers. We get the Rangers and the Astros at 5:10. Orioles and Rays at 5:35. And in the nightcap, it's an early game, 6:40. Dodgers-Rockies. Julio Urias will be on the mound for the Dodgers. Kyle Freeland for the Rockies. L.A. picking up a series win over the San Diego Padres. That's a potential second-round matchup. Not an NL championship preview because, well, with the extended postseason, odds are the Dodgers would see the Padres in the second round if everything goes accordingly. So let's look at the playoff picture right now. And we'll start with the American League. Remember, the top two teams from each division automatically qualify. So if the playoffs were to begin right now, out of the AL East, Rays, Yankees. Out of the AL Central, White Sox, who have already clinched a spot, and the Minnesota Twins. Out of the AL West, A's, Astros. Okay, and then the next two best teams make it, rounding out the field of eight. And as it sits right now in the American League, that would be the Toronto Blue Jays and the Cleveland Indians. So three teams from the Central, three teams from the East. There would be really only two teams coming out of the AL West because the Mariners, they have some ground to make up. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that the AL eight-squad playoff picture, it's set. We may see some different seeding, but I think our eight playoff teams in the AL, I think they're set with 10 games to go. Now, the National League, a little bit different. Out of the NL East, Braves, Marlins, and the Marlins right now hold a slim one-game lead over the Phillies, but if they were to begin today, Braves, Marlins. Central, Cubs, and Reds. Yes, the Reds have climbed back up right now just a hair better than the Cardinals for winning percentage. And then in the West, Dodgers, Padres, and the Dodgers have clinched a playoff spot. The next two teams in the National League, this is where it gets really interesting. Philadelphia is at 24-24. The Giants are at 24-24. There's your eight playoff teams. Right behind would be the Cardinals, who, again, are just a hair behind the Reds for second place in the Central and a hair behind the Giants for a wild card spot. And then the Phillies at 24-24. Teams still on the hunt. The Milwaukee Brewers, they are right there. The Rockies are right there. The NL picture is wide open, completely different than what it looks like right now in the American League. We know the Dodgers and Padres are going to the playoffs. I believe the Braves are a lock right now in the East, and I believe the Cubs are a lock in the Central. But from that point on, things get a little murky when you look at the Major League Baseball, the National League playoff picture, that is. Again, I mentioned we get one game tonight in the NBA, Game 2 between the Celtics and the Heat. I have to believe that every game comes down to the wire. I think we have two very evenly matched squads. We saw it come down literally to the end of overtime in Game 1. If this series goes seven games, I am not going to be surprised at all, but the Heat may be the hottest team in the NBA at the moment. The way they took care of the Bucks and then taking Game 1 against the Celtics, this may be the hottest team in the NBA. 5 o'clock tip-off here tonight. We have to wait one more night for Game 1 of the Western Conference Finals. That'll be tomorrow between the Nuggets. They may be one of the hottest teams in the league as well, based on their three consecutive wins over the Clippers. They'll take on the Lakers. And even though the Lakers have taken care of their first two series in five games, you know, they lost Game 1 of the Blazers, won the next four, lost Game 1 of the Rockets, won the next four, they still don't have the best record in the postseason. Because the Heat took a sweep of the Pacers, they beat the Bucks in five, and they haven't lost to the Celtics yet. So right now the Heat are 9-1 in the postseason. You realize how impressive that is, considering they had that 4-5 matchup with the Pacers, then they had to take out the best team in the league record-wise in the Bucks, and now they're going toe-to-toe with the Celtics? That's how good Miami has been. Coming up on the show today, we will talk a lot of football in general. In fact, next segment, we're going to preview tomorrow night's high school football contest. The Carbon Dinos, they'll open up Region 12 play on the road against the Richfield Wildcats. Richfield 4-1, Carbon 1-4. Carbon right now, number 16 in the RPI, which means they would be in the playoffs if they were to begin today. Carbon looking to recover from a 37-20 loss to Union last week. Coach Phil Howe is going to join us in studio here in just a moment. And with week two of the NFL season kicking off in just a couple of hours, we got to get you set from a fantasy perspective. We'll bring in Joe Bartel of rotowire.com. Joe will join us every Thursday this year to get you set for fantasy. We'll talk about potential waiver pickups. We'll look at some of the hot players from week one. Are you concerned with Tom Brady or Drew Brees? It was not the type of performance that I think anyone expected from a quarterback standpoint. I believe if you have Brady, you're in better shape than if you have Drew Brees. We'll see if Joe agrees with me, and we'll look ahead to some of the best plays in Week 2, and we'll preview Week 2 of the NFL. That's all coming up here on this edition of Drive Time Sports. We're back in just a moment.
For every passing play, every running play, every win, and every loss, there is one man making all the calls. Get ready to dig deep into this week's game and relive all of last week's plays. It's Real Talk About Your Team.
We're going to talk more high school football today here on the Coach's Corner. Coming up tomorrow night on KRPX 95.3 The Peak, the Carbon Dinos will open up Region 12 play. They'll travel on the road to take on the Richfield Wildcats. Always a tough environment to go into, but Carbon is fresh off of a game where they may have been on the losing side of the scoreboard, but may have put forth their best effort and best game front to back. We're going to talk about that and more right now with head coach Phil Howa, who's joining us in studio. And coach, as always, I appreciate you taking out the time of the day to come on down to the studio. Thank you.
Well, thanks for having us in.
Absolutely, coach. I always look forward to it. And we'll start by talking about the game this past Friday against Union. It was one that was there for the taking, which I think is a really good sign. Once again, Rome wasn't built in the day. You're going to have to work. You're going to have to work up to it. And playing to that level of competition, Union is a school that Carbon has traditionally struggled with, and it was ripe for you guys. You had an opportunity to win this game.
You know what? Any head coach would be in the situation I was. We had Union Cougars worried. Mm-hmm. They wondered where we came from. And our kids played probably the best half of football I've been involved in. It was easy column plays because kids were doing their assignments. With base football, play action, and Union was fit to be tied. I mean, we could have easily been two touchdowns ahead of that game at half, and it ended up going in 20-20 at halftime, and they caught some momentum right before half.
Yeah, giving up a touchdown right at the end of the first half, I mean, that's something that it can linger into the second half. So, obviously, you sense that. You sense that Union kind of used that coming out in the third quarter. And did the kids get down that they gave up a touchdown? I think 16 seconds left in the first half?
Well, I think they were okay with it. They just didn't realize Union was going to come out loaded for bear. I mean, they came out thinking, well, we're good. We can play against Union, and Union made some adjustments. Senior night at Union High School, a lot of things to get your kids pumped up about. Coach apparently flipped out on them at halftime and told them it was unacceptable, and they stepped up, and we were kind of shell-shocked.
As far as the way you guys played, I mean, we look at a couple of key plays. We saw Keaton connect with McCaden Whiteleather on a 55-yard touchdown. Typically, plays like that evokes different kind of excitement than the efficient drives. I know from a coach's standpoint, you love the efficient drives where you take time off of the clock and you really beat up the opposition. But boy, when you have a big-time play down the sideline like that, that brings a different kind of momentum to the players on the sideline. That's accurate, isn't it?
You know what it is? We've had issues running. Mm-hmm. And when you run an option, you need to have running positivity. We ran well on Friday, which did open up the passing game and gave our quarterback some time. I have to give some credit to Keaton Rich. He's getting better every week. You know, he stayed in the pocket on that 50-yard touchdown. Saw the rush, stepped inside, let his backs lineman block for him, and he threw a bullet, threw it right on the money. So. Twice, not just once, but coming out of the end zone, he did the same thing, which is a gutsy call. But I have confidence in Keaton to get us out of trouble. So, you know what? Our line's blocking well. I think we played so hard the first half, I think we got tired. I said, we've never played to that in that intensity level. And when we got out that second half, we were kind of reaching for an empty gas tank. And we've worked on that this week. Our kids have stepped up and worked harder. Again, my philosophy is we get better. And every week, I think we've gotten better.
Coach, when you look at a first-year starter at quarterback, and this is something that I've noticed over the last 10 years of covering high school football, you'll see a couple of things start to develop later on in the year. First off, trust in your offensive line. And as you mentioned, the offensive line blocking a little bit better. You just get a little bit more comfortable standing or even climbing that pocket when you don't have to look over your shoulder, right? When the internal clock can actually get to its full length before you have to get rid of the football. And then also moving the defense with your eyes. I mean, that's something that I've noticed. It takes kids a few weeks when they're a first-year starter at the varsity level because the game is so much faster. So do you sense that Keaton is now able to do that, maybe look off, move the defense with his eyes a little bit, and at the same time trust his offensive line inside the pocket?
Exactly. And I said one other thing we have as an advantage is Keaton can run. And now we're getting him to try to see opportunities to iso himself and run up the middle when there's a gap and take it upon himself to make some positive yardages. We're a read option. We can read the fullback, pitch to the tailback, and Keaton has that option to cut it up at any time. So, again, with his running ability, with his passing ability, that's a good combination, and it puts defenses on their heels.
And I know one of the things you've been harping on over the last couple of weeks is getting some production from the fullback spot. You guys did get that from in this game against Union. You got some production.
We did. Jake ran really well, ran hard, probably had 30 yards, but they still had to honor him. Because he was a mountain going through the middle. And Davin was our outside speed, and he got outside a couple of times and scared him. Again, we scored with Davin in the first half with a crossbuck type stuff, misdirection. You know what? They're working hard. The kids are working hard. Our outside receivers aren't a typical outside receiver. They're willing to block, and then take their opportunities when we give them.
Again, Coach Phil Hawa of the Carbon Dinos is our guest right now as we talk about now this Friday's game. It is the Region 12 opener against Richfield. And, Coach, I know the RPI maybe a little bit has been taken away from Region. I mean, a Region championship doesn't mean what it used to mean three, four years ago. But still, the kids gear up for Region play, right? And, I mean, the first 5 weeks of the season, it's all in anticipation for what you can do within your division. And that begins this Friday.
Yep, it is. You know, it's this first 5 weeks has gone fast. I said all building, all learning from our mistakes. And you know what? Richfield's a team that's really similar to Union High School. They're big. They're a little bigger front line-wise defensively. And, you know, sometimes that's good for us. I said we lack a little bit of speed. We are young. You know, we're a junior line. So we don't see things as fast as maybe a senior would. So, and we are, you know, like I said, we're getting better. We're getting better at picking things up, picking stunts up. You know what? I feel good about going to Richfield. Richfield is hard to win at.
Yeah.
Typically, you know, you have a couple extra players you got to play against. And you know what? I'm not going to say anything in that respect to the kids. We're going to go in. We're going to play our best, see if we can surprise them like we surprised Union, and maybe have a better second half.
Yeah, one of the things that stands out to me at Richfield, I mean, Gavin Brown, the quarterback, he's got three kids that have already gone over the 100-yard receiving mark in five games. And really, you look at that and you say, okay, that's not that big of a deal. Well, it is when he's got 9 or 10 kids that he has completed a pass to. I mean, they have a lot of different weapons. And as you said, a lot of similarities to what Union wants to do. They're going to spread the field out, and they're going to go down outside the numbers.
That seems like the offense in the region. I mean, everybody's running that RPI, is it RPI?
Yeah.
RPO, whatever.
RPO,
yeah. Yeah, RPO. You know what? We just have to be patient. Our linebackers have to read. Our line have to fire off, hit, read, and react. And, you know, we have to watch the quarterback. He's a weapon. I mean, he can run. He can pass. If we put pressure on him, we make things happen.
They do have a back out of the backfield, Casey Giddings, who we've got to watch over the last couple of seasons. I mean, this kid is the real deal as well, so it does balance out that offense a little bit. So, Coach, when you have a team that can attack you in different ways, I mean, be it on the outside, be it inside the guards, maybe outside the tackles on the ground, how have you prepared for Richfield? Is there anything that you guys have done specifically this week in practice after watching video?
Well, we had them read pulling guards, you know, hopefully trail them, keep in the pocket, keep under control and be ready to be hit. You know, hunker down and not be moved out of that B-C gap, you know. make things turn back in where you have help. We got to keep them contained. If we can keep them contained, we have good linebackers, good down linemen that can make some tackles.
After every game, I get excited to look at the box score if we're talking about defense, because there is a kid that I think we need to give a little bit of individual recognition to, and that's Carmichael, who is top five. I still believe he's top five in the 3A classification for tackles. That's impressive, Coach. That's impressive.
Oh, you know what? Will works hard. Will's a hard worker. He's willing to do anything you ask him to do, and then some. I'm happy for Will. I mean, he truly works hard enough to deserve it. He's not one of these kids that's getting it handed to him. Hayden Tallarico picked it up and actually got more tackles than Will did this week. Hayden was put in a starting position, and wow, he stepped up too. So, again, we always have an opportunity for kids to step up. We're trying to work individuals every day, so kids are getting better every day. Sometimes that's hard as coaching staff because you have so much you want to go over. But we are being real diligent to work on fundamentals every day. So it's working.
Yeah, you said just get better each week. That's all you can ask. Just get better each week.
Get better every week. And that's our goal as Carbon High football. Get better, show character, be proud of who we are. And it'll all work out.
Good week of practice so far?
So far, yep. We pre-game today. So I make the kids get full dressed so we can, if we have to hit, we hit. Typically, if you put them in shorts, no shoulder pads, you lose the intensity of practice, and we can't afford to do that. So I may end up practice today with a little hitting drill just to finish up and make them understand that football is about hitting.
I know last week, Coach, we did talk about the injury front, and there were a couple of question marks. I mean, we know that Cooper Shade's gone. We know that Orlando Vasquez is not going to be playing. But outside of those two, does everything look okay for this team on the injury front?
Well, we got Derek Robinson broke a hand, but he's in a cast that he can play with. It's big. I mean, we have to club him, but as long as we pad it, he can play. The pain's not bad. It's just more of a precaution. Like I said, we've had some illnesses, some sickness, not COVID, thank goodness. It's like apparently strep throats going around, sinus infections.
It's amazing. The kids can get sick without it being COVID. Believe
yes,
it or not, they can.
Yeah. And thank goodness that we we have the option that we can choose to go and get tested or not. Mm-hmm. Typically, our parents are keeping a calm head and realizing that they're not showing symptoms of COVID, so don't freak out and don't go get tested. Once they get tested, they're quarantined mm-hmm. until the test comes back. So we have a couple kids that have a healthcare worker that's been diagnosed with COVID, and so they're stuck home for every time we turn a corner and think we're headed in it, we just get set back a little bit. Yeah. And that's football. That's Carbon High. That's high school football, high school in general. So you know what? We're just going to take it in stride. We're going to take the kids that are healthy this week, and we're going to go to Richfield and do the best job we can do, and that's all we can do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Coach, again, thank you so much for taking out the time to join us. Best of luck tomorrow against Richfield, and I'm sure we'll talk again real soon.
All right. Thanks, Jordan.
We're going to pause for just a moment, but we do have more Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. We'll begin to talk NFL football. Coming up tonight, we have the Browns and the Bengals, and of course, it's week two for you fantasy players. We'll be joined by Joe Bartell of RotoWire.com. We'll talk fantasy football right after this.
More Drive Time Sports on KOAN. The play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
So now you open my eyes.
Here comes the quarterback, Burrow. Looking for a block, and he got it up in the front by Hopkins into the end zone. Touchdown!
I feel like I'm gonna lose my way.
Week two of the NFL season will kick off tonight right here on KOAL. We're going to get you out to Westwood One's coverage beginning at 6 p.m. I'm looking forward to week two because, well, week one, it's just the realm of the unknown, especially if we talk fantasy football. And we're doing that every Thursday this year. We'll get you set up for week two right now. Joe Bartell, he's a fantasy expert with RotoWire.com. He's joining us over the phone right now. And Joe, it's a pleasure to get you back on. How'd you fare week one?
You know, I could have done better, but when you are in 16 leagues like I am, there's just going to be bad moments and bad weeks. And I think, for the most part, week one is a figuring out process. How are teams really going to look? Are you anticipating bad defenses, good defenses, things like that? And we have a lot more data, a lot more tape out there as well to be able to kind of make your assertions and reaffirm what your beliefs are. And so I think I went 5-11 or something in that range. And, you know, a couple of those were dynasty losses where teams were just going to be bad to begin the season. So I'm not worried about it. This is probably one of the better feeling week ones I've had in the past couple of years, working with RotoWire and really diving into fantasy football to the way I have. Even with the bad record, I feel pretty confident as to what I feel like the season is going to look like.
Yeah, I don't know how you keep 16 fantasy football teams straight. Kudos to you. I don't know how you do it.
Spreadsheet, Excel spreadsheet. Not always on me, but just about every night I'm updating it, changing the rosters around, making sure I have the correct pickups going on. I mean, we do the Tuesday RotoWire NFL podcast where we're focusing on the pickups every week, so it helps a little bit. I mean, it's just part of the job. But yeah, having that Excel spreadsheet is a huge factor for me.
No, it's amazing how you do that. Let's take a look at some of the Week 2 plays that you like. You and I just had a conversation off the air a moment ago about Malcolm Brown. And in a standard league, I absolutely love Malcolm Brown. I drafted him in my one standard league that I'm in. And I know there were some question marks about Cam Akers. And you and I talked about some of the rookie running backs that could play a factor in Week 1. Boy, it looks like Malcolm Brown, I believe his job is pretty secure in Los Angeles. Sean McVay loves to run him in between the tackles. You may see some Cam Akers, but the idea of the three-headed monster, I don't believe that exists anymore in L.A. And so if Malcolm Brown is available, Joe, I'm big on him right now.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how the Rams operate with that backfield moving forward. Brown had 21 touches compared to Akers' 15, and Daryl Henderson got just 3. I watched that Sunday night game. It felt like the Rams were in control and in pace. And if that's using the running backs to be able to do that as opposed to maybe a Cooper Kupp or Robert Woods or even the tight ends as well, who a lot of people were high on entering the year, okay, that's fine. I thought the Cowboys' defense would be more vulnerable to the pass than we saw this past week, so maybe the Rams kind of opened things up a little bit more. But here you are, Malcolm Brown, again, getting 21 touches, 18 carries for 79 yards, 2 touchdowns. The most important thing, and you mentioned this for a standard league purpose, you got almost all the red zone opportunities, I think actually all of them. So that's where the factor in the 2 touchdowns. I think he's fantastic for at least 4 or 5 weeks. You drafted Cam Akers in the second round for a reason, and you certainly passed up J.K. Dobbins, who I thought was an excellent running back prospect, for a reason, too. You're not going to just have Akers be completely out of it. To see him get 15 touches last week in his debut matters. But even for the first 3 or 4 weeks, which all are pretty favorable when it comes to the running games, I think Malcolm Brown actually makes a lot of sense and should be able to get opportunities to score. When we saw last week, Eagles, Washington, Peyton Barber, of all people, got 2 touchdowns. That's the same type of spot where Malcolm Brown is going to be operating this week. And I think you're right, as a flex opportunity, as a running back 3 or 4, Brown makes a lot of sense. And there was a reason why he was one of the top pickups this week, because he's going to have a favorable matchup and is in a favorable spot for this offense.
Okay, so outside of Malcolm Brown, are there any other players that you can see as viable pickups, especially in deep leagues? Because I know this varies, right, depending on what type of league you are in. But, I mean, in deeper leagues, who's another viable pickup outside of Malcolm Brown, be it from the wide receiver or the running back spot, if you need someone for that flex?
Yeah, I thought there was actually a lot. Last year, around this time, there really wasn't many running backs. Ironically, it was Malcolm Brown last year that you could safely pick up and say he could start. But it was actually DJ Chark and John Ross who ended up emerging as the two premier options. Ross got hurt later in the year, but Chark ended up being a fantasy starter the whole season. I think this year we actually had more capable options for the rest of the year than we've had in past seasons. James Robinson is the first name, and I have to imagine in most 12-team leagues he was probably picked up or drafted very late in your drafts around August or whatever, once they trade away Leonard Fournette. But the encouraging part for James Robinson is that he was basically the focal point. He was the only guy doing anything for that offense. I thought Chris Thompson would do more things as a pass catcher. That never occurred, and Robinson was, I think, the third or fourth most snaps among running backs all of last week. That's great news for Jacksonville, and I think if you have Robinson or if he's available for some reason, he needs to be picked up, and you can essentially act as a running back 3 or a starter if you need to in other weeks. I also like Naeem Hines as a flex option, especially with Marlon Mack now out. It's going to be Jonathan Taylor doing Jonathan Taylor stuff. I really love him if you're trying to trade for him, because he didn't do great things last week, but he should in future weeks. I think he's one of the best talents right now at the position and behind a really favorable offensive line. But we know what Phillip Rivers does with running backs, and Hines is going to be a guy that he targets often. Paris Campbell got a lot of work. We saw T.Y. Hilton factor in, too. But this is going to be an Austin Eckler situation all over again, but maybe minus the better running opportunities that Eckler does compared to Hines. Eckler was still a top 10, top 15 fantasy running back in PPR formats, even when Melvin Gordon was around. And I think you're just going to see the same thing with Hines. So certainly the PPR format, he was worth 20 to 25% of your budget, if not more. And I think he can be a guy that you start out flex just about every week.
Again, Joe Bartel of RotoWire, our guest right now as we talk about week two of fantasy football. Joe, let's focus on the quarterbacks for a moment. We'll talk about the marquee matchup on Sunday. We had Tom Brady, we had Drew Brees. You and I did talk about these guys a little bit heading into the draft. It was not the best of showing for either of these quarterbacks in any type of league that you may have them in. One of the things, though, that I did find comforting with Tom Brady, he did accumulate over 100 yards of pass interference penalties downfield. I didn't even get that sense from Drew Brees. So I'm curious as to how you evaluated these two, and if this is what either of these two guys are your starting quarterback, who do you feel more comfortable with moving forward, Brady or Brees?
Yeah, I think it's Brady, and it's weird. I mean, you're right. That was the marquee matchup for last week, and definitely was a disappointment if you enjoyed watching just football being played. You would have thought with two veteran quarterbacks, Super Bowl aspirations for both of them, that the offenses would have done better. But there was some encouraging signs. I think the fact that Brady was able to do enough throwing the ball was great. Like, it wasn't a complete, oh gosh, this is Peyton Manning all over again, he shouldn't even be out in the field type of situation. I thought Tom Brady looked like what Tom Brady is to me, which is a Hall of Fame quarterback, but maybe not a top 12 starter this season. There are arm accuracy concerns. I think part of the reason he got so many pass interference calls is because they were underthrown, allowing the receivers to make a play. There's just going to be physical things that happen from that. It makes sense. But guys like Scotty Miller were a huge factor underneath, kind of in that Wes Welker, Julian Edelman role. Chris Godwin did some things while he was healthy. Mike Evans just historically struggles against the Saints. So even with his injury history, and certainly this past week, I wasn't terribly concerned with that. And then Ronald Jones being the premier back for the Buccaneers when they had already signed Leonard Fournette, and then McCoy kind of factoring in every once in a while as a passing option, that was all good news and all good stuff. I mean, it's not really related to Tom Brady, but those were question marks that we need to have answered for the Buccaneers offense, and I thought we got a definitive answer, which is really a great thing for fantasy purposes after week one. The other thing, and we talked about this on the Tuesday RotoWire NFL podcast as well, O.J. Howard was a factor as a tight end. We all know about Gronkowski, but Howard was actually targeted more and got more receiving yards than Gronk last week. And I think he was actually targeted more in the red zone as well. Gronk got one or two, and Howard got the touchdown towards the end of the game. If Howard is going to be a factor in that offense, that's fantastic news. Might come at the expense of Mike Evans, but even if it hurts a little bit of Gronk shares, having a guy like Howard, and we know how athletic and talented he is, actually be able to prove on that would be really good news. So Tom Brady is the one that I was like, okay, it makes more sense. With Michael Thomas potentially out now for a couple of weeks, that's going to be really interesting to see how the Saints offense operates. Is it going to be more Alvin Kamara? Does Traquan Smith factor in that? Is Emmanuel Sanders now going to be the go-to target? Do they do more tight end stuff with Jared Cook? Do they get more trick plays in there? I don't know. Like, we haven't really seen this offense without Michael Thomas. We saw it without Kamara. And it was okay. It was effective enough. But without Michael Thomas, it might be different. And I don't think they have a receiver on that roster that can do Michael Thomas things. So I'm a little bit concerned about Drew Brees if I have to start him this week and in future weeks as long as Thomas is out.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I can throw another quarterback in the same category as Drew Brees. I do not like the matchup for Carson Wentz coming up this week against the Rams. If you go back and look at week one, the Rams, they managed to get some pressure on Dak Prescott. I believe they were top six, top seven, if I'm not mistaken, in rush rate. Then you take a look at Carson Wentz and this decimated offensive line for the Philadelphia Eagles. Joe, you can tell me if I'm wrong, but if Carson Wentz is my starting quarterback in week two, I'm looking at other options.
Yeah, I guess it would depend on how far you want to go down. Like, I really believe in Joe Burrow, actually, for tonight's game against the Browns. The Chargers are really effective at getting to him, making him uncomfortable in the pocket. I don't see a similar scenario occurring for the Browns. And Burrow is going to give you those rookie yardage rushing totals. I feel like we see from every rookie quarterback, it's just what happens. You get the rushing touchdown on a check call to the QB draw. It was a big factor. But he was really mobile, I thought, inside and outside the pocket. Even if he ends up throwing for less than 200 yards, I think you're going to get 30, 40, 50 rushing yards. That helps. So I'd rather have Burrow over Wentz. I think I'd rather have Stafford as well against the Packers, especially if Kenny Galladay is active. That's going to make a big difference. And we don't know his status entering Sunday's game. But we know what Kirk Cousins did, even in junk time production. And I think it's going to be a similar type of deal. So Stafford, Burrow are certainly options I'll go with, maybe even a Tannehill too. But if you're going like Gardner Minshew against the Titans, or, I don't know, Daniel Jones against the Daniel Jones against the Bears, or even, I don't know, Jared Goff in the reverse of that matchup against the Eagles defense, I don't know. Those are tough calls, and I'd rather just defer to the guy that I drafted a little bit higher, who I know is athletic and has the deep opportunities in DeSean Jackson and the tight ends to do stuff with. That's where I'd lean towards. But I think Wentz is just outside my top 14 of starting quarterbacks this week.
Yeah, he'd be outside my top 14 as well. Close, but outside my top 14. If we take a look at wide receiver play, I mean, look, if you're a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, you had to be encouraged by what you saw with Juju Smith. And if you're in a dynasty league, you were probably a little bit let down by Juju last year. He now has a quarterback that can get him the ball. He brought in all six of his targets last week. You can look at a couple of other wide receiver options. Who were you impressed with in week one that you believe will stay on track and have a big week two?
Well, we're going to go back to the Thursday game. Will Fuller really being a huge factor for the Chiefs, against the Chiefs for the Texans offense was a big deal to me. I wasn't convinced of Will Fuller. I never really bought the hype, and he was going early mid to sixth round drafts in August. It's like, wow, that's a pretty high price to pay when we have a Devontae Parker who was a 1,000-yard receiver last season and actually played the whole time. We had a few other breakout candidates in that range as well, and then Will Fuller who can't make it through a full 16-game season healthy. But if you get 12 games of Will Fuller getting 10-plus targets with an offense that you figure is going to have to pass often throughout the year, yeah, give me that every time. I'm not starting Will Fuller this week if I have him against the Ravens. I think the Ravens are once again going to be a juggernaut defense that you just want to avoid as best you can. But I was really impressed with his kind of production. And you're right, Juju Smith-Schuster as a reinforcement of what we saw. Another Monday night game as well, Darius Slayton. You were drafting him in the 9th or 10th round for exactly what you saw on Monday, where he can get those deep opportunities, was a favorite target of Daniel Jones when everyone was hurt, is still a favorite target now when everyone's healthy for the Giants. That's a huge part. I'll give you a little bit of a deeper name as well, too. Laviska Shenault, the fact that the Jaguars were scheming both offensive passing plays but also running plays for their rookie wide receiver, that was a really encouraging sign to me. I mean, we talked about COVID camp and what that's going to look like and can the rookies really be effective. If you're already scheming running plays for your wide receiver on week one of the season, it's clear you believe in him. And there isn't a lot of talent to go around on that offense. They might have to give Shenault 80-85% of the snaps. And if you figure the Jaguars are tanking like some believe, well, then there's going to be a lot of junk time production available there. I think he's really a really great pickup that you might not be considering. And I thought the way he was using that offense is fantastic.
Joe Bartel, again of RotoWire, taking out the time to join us to get you set up for Thursday Night Football, Week 2 of the Fantasy Realm. Joe, it's always a pleasure. I always look forward to the conversations. Before I let you go, give us more information on where you're at. I know you're active on Twitter as well. You'll answer any fantasy football questions.
Yeah, if any of you listeners out there have any questions related to your league, of course, RotoWire, you can go to rotowire.com/free and get a 10-day free trial. As part of that, you have a ability to send in subscriber-related questions. So if you are a subscriber to the site, we have experts every day, every hour of the week answering questions for you, not just related to NFL, but basketball, baseball, really any sport. We can cover that for you as part of our Ask an Expert feature. But also, if you just want to reach out to me directly at JB Fantasy Sports, I'll answer any Twitter questions I can, so long as I get the notifications. I feel like my phone robs me of that interaction sometimes. So whenever I'm able to check, I try to answer all those that I can. So, yeah, a lot of different options out there. And with all the sports going on, I'm sure a lot of people have fantasy sports-related questions that they need answering. So a lot of good tools out there to use.
Hey, Joe, I definitely appreciate the time. It's always fun to chat with you. Looking forward to it again next week. Best of luck, week two of the fantasy game.
Yeah, same to you. And again, thanks for having me on.
Let's break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. We'll continue on down the NFL road right after this on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Hey, let's get back to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on 750 AM, KOAL.
6 o'clock tonight, we'll send you out to Cleveland. Browns playing host to the Bengals. Travis, who are you taking tonight? Week two, kicking things off. We got a little bit of a primer last week. We got to watch both these teams lose. Who are you rolling with?
I think I'm going to go with the Bengals on the road. I like what Joe Burrow did in game one. not sold on Baker Mayfield and Cleveland, so I think that it's almost maybe a must-win for Cleveland. If they don't win, then I think all hell's going to break loose with that team.
Yeah, it very well could. Here's the thing. Joe Burrow did look like a rookie in Week 1. I thought he looked very poised on what could have been a game-winning drive. Remember, he hit A.J. Green in the corner. It was an obvious pass interference. Flag came out. Take the touchdown off the board. I thought Joe Burrow looked poised there. At times, he looked like a rookie. Here's the problem. If you go back and you look at Week 1, there were times where Baker Mayfield looked like a rookie. Okay, I can buy it with Joe Burrow. There was no preseason. And that amplifies the difficulty for a rookie quarterback. We have to remember that. There was no preseason. Joe Burrow's first game in the NFL was Week 1. It actually counted right out of the gate. Here's the difference for me. The Browns, they have a better line up front. When I look at what Baker Mayfield got out of the running attack last week, I like it. You know, the combination of Chubb and Hunt, that's pretty dynamic. You got to get Odell back on track. That's one of the big things. I'm going to go with the Browns because they are at home, but you are 100% correct. If the Browns lose tonight, Stefanski is going, I mean, you said all hell will break loose with Kevin Stefanski. He's in a tricky spot right now. There's rumors circulating that maybe they'll move on from Odell Beckham. It's only Week 1, and there's already talks. The Odell trade talks are popping back up. It's a tough spot to be in for the Browns. They need a win tonight. They need a win much more than Cincinnati.
Yeah, they have to start winning because you don't, you know, draft Baker Mayfield that high to be in the situation where you're poor once again. So, like you said, if, you know, if they lose tonight, they might move on from Odell here in the next few weeks.
I think they may move on from him anyway. I think this may be, we may see him play.
It was stupid to trade for him in the first place.
Yeah, they went for it. They went for it. But yeah, no, I think that we are probably, yeah, I think his days are numbered in Cleveland. I really do. On the flip side, Joe Burrow, what type of improvement is he going to have Week 2? Again, his head coach, Zach Taylor, this guy was brought in to groom a quarterback. He's now got his quarterback. I think it's an interesting game. And again, live coverage is going to begin at 6 p.m. Game 2, Eastern Conference Finals. Heat, Celtics, who are you rolling with tonight?
Give me Boston tying things up.
I'll take the Celtics as well. Out of time of this edition of Drive Time Sports. We'll be back to do it again tomorrow. I want to thank Joe Bartel and also Coach Phil Howell for taking out the time to join us. Be safe. We are out.